Christmas has been a very good holiday for all of us. And I want to welcome you to this first sitting that we're having today. It is, from signs of the times, apparent that we are going to have a very difficult, tough quarter in terms of times, because two of our meetings for this quarter will not happen because there's some other very important things that we'll be doing. During one of the weeks, we will be participating in the pre-People's Parliament, and the other week we will be participating in an NCOP training session. So I am therefore appreciating even more the efforts that you have made to be with us today, and thank you for that. We have the minutes of the last meeting before us. It's unfortunately some time ago. To do justice to the minutes, I would not just ask for an adoption, but would give us an opportunity to peruse it again before we make a decision. You don't have a copy? Yeah, none of us got it. But we will, after this meeting, revert to the old standard procedure again. It's right there. Okay, on page one is basically the attendance. I think that's fine. Page two is the opening and welcome. Then we had an apology for the four members, that's noted in front. Then we received a briefing by South African Tourism, where they presented their annual report 2013-2014. 3.1 was on corporate governance, 3.2 on page 3 was on the audited performance information, 3.3 was on the budget allocation. Then they went to 4, which is the committee comments. Maybe we just need to look at that. I'll read it to us. The committee welcomed the briefing on annual report, noted and congratulated the South African Tourism on the unqualified audit opinion received. Further, the committee urged the South African Tourism to put in place a comprehensive turnaround strategy to address all the issues raised by the Auditor General in order for the South African Tourism to move from unqualified to a clean audit opinion. And 5 was the consideration and adoption of the minutes of the previous meeting. 6 was the consideration and adoption of the Northern Cape and Limpopo Drought Oversight Report that we had also adopted in the Economic Affairs Committee. Our meeting then adjourned at 12:30 p.m. Could I ask for someone to propose? No, let me do it this way. Are there any amendments that needs to be made to the minutes? Okay, can I then propose acceptance and somebody to second?
I move for the acceptance in the absence of any corrections.
Thank you very much. And Honorable von Lennon, second that. Thank you very much, colleagues. Honorable Mokwena, I hope that you are observing how grateful Comrade Faber is to see you. We are all sharing in the joy of seeing you. We appreciate you being here. Can I immediately then hand over to Ambassador Moyela? Is he gone now? Before I do that, I think it's just going to be important to say to those that are observing our proceedings here that I have puzzled during the last couple of days with the constitutional provision of a People's Parliament, and I was asked to address a meeting of the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation where we particularly looked at that Section 4 or Chapter 4 of our Constitution, and we are therefore so much more appreciative of you making the time to also come observe our proceedings here. Welcome. Ambassador, I'm going to request that you introduce yourselves to the meeting, and we hand over to you then. It would be helpful if we can just, before you start, get an indication of what time you would need to take us through the documents before us so that we can structure our meeting accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members of the Select Committee. My name is Clayson Munyela. I am Deputy Director General responsible for public diplomacy at the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. I'm joined by my colleagues here. There will be two presentations that we are going to make. The first one will be on the public diplomacy strategy for the department, for the country, and we will also make a presentation on SAQA, which is going to be made by my colleague here, who I'm going to ask to just quickly introduce himself before I talk about the time we're going to need for the presentation.
Thank you, DDG. Chairperson, honorable members, yes. My name is Andre van der Vente. I'm Deputy Director in the Policy Research and Analysis Unit in Durco. And I will be presenting on the South African Council on International Relations and the status thereof. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Over here is Mr. Matebe. He is the Parliamentary Liaison Officer. He's based in Parliament. And I'm sure honorable members have interacted with him. Chair, I think I'm going to need roughly 50 to 20 minutes for the presentation. And then we can have a discussion of thereafter, you know, Q&A and that sort of thing. But for the presentation itself, 15 to 20 minutes should be adequate.
Can I then just check that there are two documents before us? And you spoke about Mr. Van der Vende also making a contribution. So the 15 to 20 minutes, then we have a conversation on that, and then we have the other presentation. Super.
Okay. This document is marked secret.
I was sick of this thing.
And I want to know what that means. Because our meetings are open to the public and the media. So how deep does this secrecy go? And is this also a muted and barred meeting? Because I have to send the urgent SMS.
No. Let me clarify. The first page was taken from a previous presentation. That's why it's no longer my secret there. If you see it on the screen, so you can just delete that secret there. It's not a secret document. It's a public document.
No,
because the new documentation, all the pages are secret. This is on our body.
Which one? This one.
This is even more secret.
Yeah. No. You can disregard it. The public.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will therefore proceed and go into the presentation itself. We will touch on the public diplomacy mandate. We'll do a bit of a situational analysis before going into the elements of the public diplomacy strategy. We'll not touch on everything in the interest of time, but we'll highlight the key elements of it. And what entails our program for 2015 before we conclude the presentation. Public diplomacy entails communication of South Africa's foreign policy, priorities and objectives through direct
and indirect communication. We use various media platforms, including face-to-face communication, and obviously new media, including social media, in a way that's all-inclusive, transparent, no secrecy, no journey, and consistent. We obviously, because of the nature of the work that we do, target both local and international audiences. In other words, our mandate is both domestic and global. And this with a view to shape debates and seek to cultivate an understanding of South Africa's role in international politics and economics. What gives us comfort, Honorable Chair, is that when it comes to the country's foreign policy, everybody rallies behind it, because this is our national interest. It's about our national interest. It's about who we are as a country, irrespective of our situations and background. In our view, the success of any strategy or program is measured by its impact based on the objectives set out. So we did a perception survey as a bunch to try and measure the impact of our programs and strategies in the country. We check the extent to which people are aware of South African foreign policy, its posture, its principles, what informs it, and what we seek to do, and whether people are aware of the department's work both here, home, and abroad. And we found, in terms of the results of the study, which was done by an independent body, that the image of the department when it comes to the implementation and the execution of a mandate, which is the country's foreign policy, is looking good. There is a good, fair amount of awareness in the country. Initially, there was a bit of confusion around the mandate of their collective view, that of home affairs, particularly when it comes to people, you know, getting in and out of the country. You know, South Africans being abroad and getting in trouble, people would always confuse whether this is DECO's terrain or a home affairs. But given the work that we've been doing over the last 2 to 3 years, there seems to be an understanding of what the department does vis-a-vis other departments. We're not aware of any single issue of controversy at the moment affecting the department or South African foreign policy. Annually, there would be an issue around one particular visit that grabs the headline. But other than that one, largely the work of the department gets positive coverage as we implement South Africa's foreign policy. Now, here are key elements of what informs the public diplomacy strategy. Firstly, we work internally to build ambassadors for departments by ensuring that information is shared within the department so that no employee of the department can go out and misrepresent or fail to clarify or explain any decisions that the department has taken where a member of the public wants to know or get to understand the rationale behind some of the positions that we've adopted on global issues. So there are various things that we do in the department, including open days where one branch will unpack its work for the employees of the department and in the process explain what we do abroad, informed by our constitution and our foreign policy. So that we do so that internally everybody is on the same page and understand what we are trying to do. When we go out, one of the strategies that we use from a media liaison point of view is that we do weekly media briefings. Now, in those briefings, which happen every Tuesday, what we do is we will unpack the country program and unpack our positions on all global issues, but we will also reflect on other developments internationally within our space and deal with them from a South African foreign policy point of view. For example, people want to know what is happening in the DRC at the moment and whether the FDLR is going to be confronted militarily. So when we unpack that issue, for example, we'll then deal with it from both a South African perspective and also an African perspective. So it's not just an opportunity for us to unpack our work, it's also an opportunity to reflect on global issues from a South African foreign policy point of view. In addition to the weekly media briefings, our missions abroad also use the weekly statements to interact with their own stakeholders in the countries of their accreditation. We write regular opinion pieces. I think domestically, the last time we checked, we're rising more than other departments. But what we also do, because our mandate, as I said, is both domestic and global, we have partnered with Brand South Africa, which is an agency of government. Now, what Brand South Africa has is country managers in the five strategic regions that we've identified as a country. In those countries, they've got people whose responsibility it is to monitor for the international media affairs about South Africa, in an effort, obviously, to manage the reputation of our country. So when they pick up issues that we need to respond to, they let us write pieces, and they show that those pieces are placed in the international publications. It's not always reactive. Half the time we are proactive. In other words, if there's nothing, we will implant issues to try and inculcate an understanding of what South Africa is doing. To show some of the pieces that we've done. Another element of the strategy, honourable members, is our public participation program. Now, as you know, the triple P's are a directive of cabinet. The decision is that every minister or deputy minister should at least have a triple P interaction once a month, where it's possible. So we, in our case, do this both here at home and abroad. What we do is when there is an international engagement, whether it's a bilateral interaction in any country, within the program, when the minister or the deputy minister is traveling, we then package a triple P interaction, be it a public lecture or an engagement with stakeholders in the country, to try and unpack how South Africa sees international development. Obviously, everything is informed by our national interest. For us, the triple P's help in terms of connecting the dots between South Africa's foreign policy and how it has a direct impact on South Africans, the ordinary South Africans, rather, daily life. In other words, when they see a company that is invested in South Africa, it's not always obvious to the men in the streets to understand that this could be a direct result of the work that our diplomats are doing abroad. But through this triple P's, when we engage through Q&As, we unpack such things so that the people understand that our work is not just out there and has nothing to do with South Africans here at home. As I said, I mean, this takes various formats. It could be a public lecture at an institution of higher learning. It could be a community engagement, as an original definition of an imbizo. For example, on the left, this interaction took place in Sri Lanka. The Deputy Minister, Nomaidi Amfake, to deliver a lecture when she was there for something else, but we package these interactions in online engagements. During Mandela activities, you can see the minister participated in cleaning activities in Pwani. This is one public participation in Mekoring, in Bobo, just to show that we do all sorts of things, and the format varies from time to time. Another element of a public diplomacy strategy is that we developed various platforms in the context where the resources aren't readily available. We have to find a creative way of reaching out and making foreign policy topical, because it's not a very sexy subject. In fact, in South Africa, there's only one media house that has a foreign policy correspondent, one. All the others don't have. Journalists will cover a story if it's interesting enough, but otherwise, no media house has a foreign policy correspondent except one. So what we do is to insert ourselves in public discourse. We use the website, social media. We've got a YouTube account, Twitter, Facebook. And we've gone beyond that to develop a quarterly magazine, the print version of which is very small due to cost containment measures, but we've made it available electronically, so you can access this magazine, which is available quarterly globally on our website, and it's exactly as the printed version. It's distributed internationally through our missions, so it's available in the 126 countries where we've got presence. You will also find it in the domestic lounges of all the major airports in South Africa. As I said, it's available online. We distribute it to libraries, think tanks, research institutions, as well as through missions abroad. This is one picture you can see on the left there in one of the FAA lounges in Johannesburg. These are some of the previous editions that we've done of this quarterly magazine. It's a glossy magazine. Another platform that we created under the members, as I said, with the understanding of our mandate being a global mandate, we created an online registration. It's called Ubuntu Radio. You will notice that all our platforms are branded Ubuntu. And this is informed by the fact that the thrust of a foreign policy is the diplomacy of Ubuntu. The idea that if you offend the humanity of others, you offend your own. I am because you are. That's the posture of our foreign policy captured in the white paper. So we accordingly are branding all our platforms with the concept of Ubuntu. So the radio station is called Ubuntu Radio. It was launched in 2013, October. It celebrated 1 year already. Making it global, being online means you can access whether you're in Bujumbura or Harare or Pretoria or Washington. And the idea is that because of South Africa's stature in global affairs, we are an influential country. Everybody always wants to know what South Africa is thinking on any issue. So we've created this platform to have an ongoing conversation, not just with South Africans, but with Africans and the world. Primarily, if you were to ask me, the target audience for the radio station is not necessarily South Africans. Obviously, we are not excluding South Africans. But we have conversations with South Africans using many platforms domestically, whether it's the FM or 702 or community media or through our Triple P's. But we don't have enough resources to then engage with people in London, for example, or Paris, or in Lagos. But through this platform, we are now able to hear from them and clarify what we need to clarify, or just have a conversation and get some feedback. And they tell us where they agree with us and where they don't agree with us. But the important thing is that the conversation is happening. The station is fast becoming and being recognized as an authority in telling the African story from an African perspective. What we also have done in an effort to market the station and make it popular so that people can listen to us and hear what we're saying is that we've encouraged our embassies to play the station at all embassies. Now, part of the marketing is to also ensure that there are banners at the embassy's reception. So when you get in, you see a banner that says, go to www.ubuntu.com and listen to the station. One element that gives the station a competitive advantage in our view is that because we are in 126 countries, there is an official at every nation whose responsibility it is to package content for the station now, which means we can tell stories from 126 countries from an eyewitness point of view, and there aren't many media houses that can boast of having a presence in 126 countries. Nobody has that kind of manager of correspondence all over the place. What we've also done is to develop mobile apps, including the Mixit app. Those of you who are on Mixit would know that the subscriber base or user base of Mixit is 80 million worldwide. The station is now available on DSTV Audio Bouquet, which means we are in 45 African countries. This slide just shows you people that have downloaded the radio or the Ubuntu Radio application in countries where the people are residing. And if you look at the right column, you see the from Nigeria to Tanzania to Saudi Arabia to France to Mexico to Canada to the United States to Indonesia to Brazil. These are people who have downloaded our app, which means they listen to us on their mobile devices, be it smartphones or tablets, which for us is an encouragement because it says that there is an interest about what South Africa has to say, utilizing the platform. And just some of the pictures of the way that the people who are involved are doing. One of the things that we do, which is part of our PD strategy, honorable members, is that when our principals travel, we always make sure they travel with a multimedia team that records the interaction both on video and audio, and also capture stills or photos. We then share this material with other broadcasters because, as I said, broadcasters always complain about resources, and they don't always avail correspondents who travel with our principals. So what we do, we essentially do their work and give them footage, give them the content, give them the sound bites, give them the pictures, which they then publish in their newspapers along with our content. That's why you see a lot of coverage of the work that we're doing. It's not because we travel with them, it's because we do the work in-house and trade with the broadcasters, and we've seen positive results out of this exercise. We have a 24-hour operation center that monitors world events 24/7. Any time of the day you call the operation center, there's always somebody there monitoring what is happening worldwide, so that we are able to react immediately to any global development, whether it means issuing a statement or alerting our principals to any trouble that could be brewing in any part of the world. That's part of the work that we do as public diplomacy. Now, October has been declared Uatambo month. It's one key element of our strategy, what we do during the Uatambo month. By the way, Uatambo is the patron saint of our department. He is the man whose ideas we're trying to espouse as an entrenched in our foreign policy, that of patriotism, integrity, humility, and passion. So during the Uatambo month, what we do, we have an event called the Diplomatic Fair. Through this event, we're trying to expose South Africans to what we do in foreign policy. We bring all the embassies, foreign embassies accredited to South Africa, to come and exhibit a bit of their country, their culture, their music, their cuisine, and hopefully attract students to the discipline called foreign policy or diplomacy. And maybe some of them will pursue career in diplomacy. There's also a lecture that happens there in Uatambo. This is what happens last year. This is what happened rather last year during the diplomatic fair. You can see on the right there, these are stalls of all the embassies where they exhibit their staff, and the masses come. And you know, we also have a bit of fun and have some music. But the key objective of this event is to expose South Africans to what happens in diplomacy practically, and give them a taste of what other countries look like, what they dress like, what languages they speak, and that sort of thing. These are the stores that I was talking about. This is essentially what you will normally see during the diplomatic. It happens every year during the month of October in Pretoria at the Union Buildings. You can see Gabon there, giving the Africans a taste of what happens in Gabon. Now, what we've also done, honorable members, and I'm about to finish, is that we have several interactions with the members of the diplomatic corps. Weekly, we have something called Diplomatic Chat and Ambassadors Forum, where we bring the ambassadors to have an interaction with foreign policy correspondents, analysts and commentators, just so that if there's any issue within the IR space, we're able to discuss it under Chatham House rules, and things are explained. We've seen it working in and minimizing the extent to which people speculate and analyze from a position where they don't have information. We think it's an interaction that works and has yielded positive results. The last platform that we've created as part of our strategy to popularize the foreign policy is that we've introduced the Ubuntu Diplomacy Awards. Now, here we recognize South African industry leaders, eminent persons, and individuals, their contributions to promote South Africa's national interests and values across the world. Now, these are people who fly the South African flag high on global stage. So awards are presented to organizations and individuals who, through excellence and innovation, have distinguished themselves as true South African ambassadors. We just had the first one on Saturday the 14th here in Cape Town. As you can see, one of our former ambassadors, Ruth Mompati, receiving an award in category of Oatambo Lifetime Achievement Award. I mean, there were companies recognized like S.B. Miller, which is a multinational company, a South African company, a company like Nando's as well, which is in over 22 countries globally. Somebody like Charles Leclerc, who has flown the African flag high on a global stage as a singer, and won all sorts of accolades. Such people were recognized on Saturday, and this is one more strategy of ensuring that our foreign policy is out there as we communicate and take public diplomacy to new heights. So two things I'm finished. We're hosting the EU summit this year, honorable members. So part of our strategy this year or plan is to do the EU summit in South Africa different from the way the summit has always been done. And I'll highlight two things that we're going to do. This will be in June. It will be hosted in Johannesburg. So all the African heads of state will be here. We are going to have an open economy. This normally doesn't happen the night before, so that when the day of the summit starts, we focus on the business of the summit. Because our experience is that with the EU summit, the official open ceremony takes the whole day. By the time they want to go into the substantive discussions, the time is already out and they are rushing and don't focus on the business of the day. So we separate them too. But we also want to have an opportunity for all these countries to come and exhibit and also have an interaction with business in South Africa and members of the party. So there are two things that we're doing that haven't been done before. You would have heard a president saying we're also going to ensure that schools start singing the AU anthem, which popularize it, and also fly the AU flag at all government buildings and public spaces. This is a decision of the African Union, so South Africa will also be starting to implement this decision this year. Later on in the year, we'll host FOCAC, which is the Forum for China-Africa Cooperation. We're co-sharing FOCAC country with China, and that will also be hosted in South Africa later on in the year. The last one that we want to do this year as part of our strategy is Democratic South Africa has not donated any symbolic gift to the United Nations over the last 20 years, since 1994. The UN is turning 70, so we want to have a Madiba statue. You know that he's the only man who has a day dedicated to him by the UN. The 18th of July is International Nelson Mandela Day. So we're taking that day to unveil the statue at the UN in New York. Our mission there is leading the negotiations with the UN to have this happening. In conclusion, that's our presentation, and we hope that you'll note it. Thank you very much.
Honorable Kaula,
are we not taking the two? But do you want to separate this president?
Oh, okay.
Thanks to the department for the presentation. Just two questions from me, sir. The first one is in the respect of where you talk about the ambassador. I would like to know. Because of ignorance, so it might be a stupid question. How do you recruit your ambassador? I'm saying because what I've noticed as a layman out there in the streets is that more often than not, politicians who have not made it back to where they have been before are then thrown out to the court to become ambassadors for South Africa. So it's quite an interesting question for me because today I get a chance of exactly knowing how they get recruited to represent the country, because really they are very important people and they should be people of quality so that we ensure that South Africa is well represented elsewhere in the world. And secondly, you spoke something very important, the question of the image of the country outside, your TPP. You get that because the issue of image for me is crucial. I mean, the question of the message is very crucial. And you get that sometimes there will be delegations from municipalities going out of the country. And when they get there, they are not just a delegation from my municipality in Mzumbe, but they are a delegation from South Africa. You get that there are delegations from provincial legislatures and provincial governments. When they get there, they're not just provinces, they are South Africa. And you also get that, of course, with the national delegation. It's a huge task, I can imagine. But my question is, how do you ensure that when they get out of the country, in the platforms where they conduct whatever PDPs, they represent South Africa adequately? I'm saying this, Chairperson, because I've had an experience in my previous life where we were a provincial delegation to Jamaica. Fortunately, at that time, we had a very good ambassador in Jamaica. So before we went to the TV interview, there were two of us who represented the delegation to that interview, the chairperson of my portfolio committee then and myself. But I'm telling you, I had to rescue the country. Otherwise, it would have been an embarrassment. The kind of questions that were asked and the responses that my leader of the delegation was just about to give and had given before. So, you see, what I'm saying is, it happens. You know, it happens. How do you ensure that when people get out of the country and our government, irrespective of which level they serve, when they get there, they represent the country correctly? Thank you, sir.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. I must apologize, I must go to another meeting. So it's not out of disrespect, but Honourable Farber promised to bring me the message. The weekly media briefing would be actually very, very interesting to see. I know that Ms. Roz Naidu sends us all the briefings of DTI. And it's most interesting just to go through them and to see what's happening. And I wondered whether we can't be part of this mailing list or whatever. Then, this interesting statement that is made. I've been on a couple of overseas trips now as part of a WIPO committee or so. And we've always been welcomed by either the High Commissioner or the Ambassador, and we were briefed properly. What was most embarrassing was one of our members going through Congress with pink slippers. So that to me is a bigger sin than briefed by being briefed by Durko. Sorry, I couldn't resist that. It reminded me of the general with the full uniform and the slippers in the supermarket. The program profile, the OR Tambu Man. What's happening in the other 11 months? Are we covering a series of profiles or situations in South Africa? What's the strategy behind it? And then, and then one looks at, this says public diplomacy. And then it is the mandate, the public diplomacy strategy. And on the very next line, he hijacks it to the public diplomacy entails communication of South Africa's foreign policy. But then it becomes a communication strategy rather than a public diplomacy strategy. So we need to go back to the public diplomacy strategy that must feed into the communication strategy to see if the communication strategy is married to the diplomacy strategy. And if there is such a document, I'm not sure if it is there. And maybe the committee, the members can inform us at a later stage and meet with us again. And then the Madiba statue at the UN. Is this part of the 20 years democracy thing of the committee that we have in Parliament? And this is more a question directed at you as well. Because when we were in the States, the Americans, it was round about the 18th of July, and the Americans were very worried about Madiba passing away on his birthday or before his birthday, and they actually raised something like $700 million, something like horrific like that, to have a statue for Madiba in Washington, I think it was. So yes, maybe it's the right thing, but now, this, how much is this statue going to cost? And is it going to be too traditional? And is it going to be a repeat of Kinshasa at the Kinshasa airport, where the thing must be done over again? Or is it going to be placed in a place where people can't reverse into it? Or, you know, that sort of thing. But the budget is the biggest thing. Thank you. Can we give you a pen?
Let's take the last one. Because I know what's going to happen. After that, I'm going to have two more.
Okay. I'm already on the line.
So then we're going to give you a top of that.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes, Chair, as our first colleague here to my left were asking the questions about how do we as South Africa appoint ambassadors, I would really like to know that, because I know other countries do that, because mostly these are, the president might have, I think, in some countries two positions that he actually give as ambassadors, and the rest are actually career ambassadors that go through the system. And I want to ask this because if we want to actually go and sell ourselves to other countries, because this is what ambassadors do, they go and sell our country in other countries and see that there are inter-business relations to make our economy obviously grow, etc. But I must be quite honest, the overseas trip that I've done, I have only, I think, in one of the countries, met one of our ambassadors that I could really say was business street-wise, that were actually very on ball on economy and how these things are running. And to me it's a problem, because in some of the countries I could see that it was obviously, and don't take it wrong, and I'm not mean by cater deployment saying this, but it was with a president that actually, as my colleague to the left said, people were just put into places. And to be quite honest, I don't think it's adequate putting them through a 2 month course at Virgo and hope and say, geez, we just hope he makes it. We can't do this. It remains a problem for us. I think to be an ambassador in a country is most probably one of the most important tasks as a South African in another country. And I really like to know how you guys are addressing this challenge, because I also know that you can say to the president who to appoint and now who not to appoint. I do understand that that's a catch-22. But how do you go about making a good situation out of a bad situation? And can you do it more? Because I'm gonna mention the National Party now, and I hope he's not one of someone's friends here. But when you were in Dubai, for instance, when Honorable Cedric Solik and I went to Dubai, where an ambassador was moaning about he has to stand up every morning early to go and get ministers at the airport. He applied for the shot. He got the shot. And at that stage, the problem to me was Dubai at that stage was maybe one of the most vibrant economies, growing economies. And when we were sitting there trying to get some information on how does this benefit South Africa? It's an old ambassador, unfortunately, at that place. Apparently we've got a brand new ambassador that is now clear. But this guy was really sitting there and giving us all the problems that he has as a person, standing up at night and just a few things. And I mean, we were really excited to come and actually hear how we as South Africans can benefit in this growing, fast economy. And this is what I want to know from you. How many ambassadors get appointed by the president? How many are career ambassadors that can actually go through your system that has been instrumental in eventually selling our country? Thank you. I don't want to speak much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to attend to address all the questions. Let me start with the last one. It's true that in terms of the constitution, all ambassadors are appointed by the president. All ambassadors. That's what the Constitution says every ambassador that is posted abroad, the letter of appointment is signed by the president. All of them. Now, we obviously have a very difficult task of balancing the ratio between career diplomats and other deputies to the diplomatic corps who are not necessarily career diplomats. You've already accepted that it's an issue that is not necessarily within our control. But what we do is when somebody is nominated to be ambassador or high commissioner, quite the same thing by the way, just that in the Commonwealth country they're called high commission, therefore high commissioner, but that person is ambassador. What we do is after people are nominated, we put them through the diplomatic academy. We've got an academy at the department, one of the best in the world, by the way. We get all, most African countries send their diplomats to be trained in Pretoria because the diplomatic academy is one of the best in the world. We prepare diplomats like no other. The focus country is economic diplomacy in the courses that we give them. As one of the tools to prepare them to be representatives of our country. We focus largely on economic diplomacy for the reasons that you've alluded to, Honorable Member. That the main responsibility of an ambassador is to sell your country. And by selling your country, hopefully attract investors, tourists, and other people will come and contribute to our GDP here. I can tell you now that our diplomats are doing a fantastic job. If you look at the numbers, I'm sure you had Minister Patel yesterday unpacking some of the figures. In 2013, for example, South Africa was the biggest recipient of FDI on the continent. Now, that is a direct result of the work that our diplomats do. In our mission, we host people from DTI and Home Affairs and our own diplomats and other sector departments. All of them managed by the ambassador. Every day when they go to the mission, he's the one who gives them a line of march. Today, this is what you're going to do in all of this. And we've seen fantastic results. Not only are relations between South Africa and our key partner healthy and cordial and strong, but actually translate into trade deals. Right now, the largest economy in the world, China. China is South Africa's biggest trading partner on the African continent. We are also China's biggest trading partner on the African continent, rather. They are our biggest trading partner in the world. That's the largest economy in the world, and that's the way that diplomats do. So, in answering your question, irrespective of who gets sent to DELCO as a nominee to be an ambassador, our responsibility is to train them, give them the tools to be effective when they are posted abroad. I hope I was also answering your question, Honorable Member, in the same thing. It's possible. It's possible. The issue of messaging as well, what we do is, and it's a difficult one because not everybody knocks on our doors or starts at the mission when they travel. We try and encourage people to do this. We've got a program called ROGA, Registration of South Africans Abroad. And this is also targeting ordinary South Africans. When they travel, before they travel, they must fill in a form that gives us their information. It's confidential. The information is kept as confidential as possible. But it helps in that when you get to any country in the world, and God forbid there is trouble, natural disaster, or you are arrested, or get into any sort of trouble or distress, we're able to locate you and give you the assistance that you need because you're a South African, you're entitled to it. This is why our embassies exist, to give a service to South Africans. But none of them tell us when they travel. Don't we remember us when they already travel in those countries? It becomes difficult to find them and assist them. So we try and encourage them. But that message also is given to all other sectors, including business. That when you go to a country like Paris, France, and you want to go and do business there, start at the mission first because they've got information about the opportunities that are available in that country and also intel that will help you to avoid certain mistakes that will get into trouble or, you know, and end up making you lose money. So we always advise that people should do it. The same message then goes to provinces and municipalities. Before you enter into training agreements, before you go and study tours, For example, I can tell you there's one particular country that is currently complaining to us because every week they get requests. People want to come and study the BRT system. Now, in the country, we've already implemented this. Why can't people go to Johannesburg to go and see how Joburg did it, or Tshwane with the REA? People still want to go abroad for reasons that some of us are finding difficult to understand. So it's a continuous engagement to try and explain some of the things to people. But what we try and do is that when people arrive, at least they must be briefing by the embassy so that we align the messaging and we don't speak with forked tongues. There was a question around PD strategy versus communication strategy. It's really an issue of English. In an ordinary government department, you will get a communications unit. And therefore, you have PD, public diplomacy. It's the same thing. Public diplomacy is about communications. That's what we do. So our communication strategy is our public diplomacy strategy. The issue about the state, to honorable members, we are not going to use a pen from government. The idea is to fundraise for this thing. There are companies that are always ready to support our programs. For example, the awards that we did on Saturday, the 14th, we didn't spend a penny from government. We work with the corporate Africa to implement some of our programs. So the idea is not to spend a cent from government on the Madiba station with the UN. We are positive that we will be able to raise the funds to make it happen. We think it's important, not only because the UN has recognized Madiba by dedicating a day to celebrate his birthday, but because, as I said, democratic South Africa since 1994 would not give anything to the UN. And all countries give the UN something. When you walk through the corridors of the UN building in New York, you will see either a painting or something symbolic from all other countries except South Africa. And we don't want to give them a painting because most people give them paintings. We want something symbolic that will carry and represent the South Africa that we all believe in, that represents our values and who we are. And we think the Madiba, they should capture that. There is one in Washington, but Washington, the U.S. is a big country. So the U.N. is the center. That's where all nations are represented. Absolutely. I think I've covered all questions.
I think it's just going to be important to the final one, the UN, that the motivation there is not for 20 years of freedom and celebration, but about 60th anniversary, probably 70th anniversary. Now, I've heard Ban Ki-moon, when he was talking to me this morning, saying that they want to remove that number they can first post for them to the UN. Thank you very much.
Can we now have first Honorable Mokena and then Honorable Taylor? And then we close the session with those. Now I have two brief questions as well. Please, on a more
good morning.
Yes, I it's a very interesting topic, public to public. I prefer the term people's diplomacy because, it brings it home for a number of reasons. One, because I think, the communications from government, from our government to the people, tends to be very intimate by nature and tends not to reach especially the poorest of the poor. And this then becomes a problem in certain our people understanding what government is doing. And also in informing how they behave and their attitude towards what government is doing. The reason I'm saying this is because I think the public diplomacy sector it should be at the core of educating our people. We tend to do a lot of communication about what the identity of South Africa is to the world. To the foreign. What we don't do
is to then explain to Africans what the foreign is. So that we have, you know, these so-called xenophobic attacks and all of these things, they're informed precisely by that lack of education of what the foreign is. And I think the whole department needs to be at the core of educating, so that, you know, so communication becomes extremely important. It becomes extremely important for it to reach, especially the poorest of the poor. So I wish we could do more in that direction. You know, the trusty magazines and the, you know, social media, those are all internet, you know, internet is expensive in this country. And so on and so forth. So, you know, we need to find ways of taking the message more to the people in ways that they can access. So more of educating the public about the foreign. I was just looking at your list now of the people that you've reached. It's impressive, but I'm not sure how many of our people are getting what you guys are doing. Thank you.
I'm one of the people who have not been complained to go in through to register when I go outside the country. And but one thing for sure that I know is that South Africa, through this department, we've got our footprints all over, both regionally and internationally. I can tell you now, in the October month I was in Mozambique, if you can see the level of the training that the regional countries have been able to do through our foreign diplomacy process, tapping into the possibilities that are there in the country, ensuring that we take lessons from what we've been doing. If you check 820 billion FDIs in the country, one of the biggest we've been able to do, and such countries are learning so much into what we are doing. However, we seem to be saying there are greater stories that are not reaching our own people, and I think through this policy, that's where we are bringing about synergy in terms of how do we then reach to our people. How do we I was in America also. People talk about Mandela almost every street. This is going to be an opportunity for us to be able to donate such a symbolic asset to the UN, so that our people can be able to not rely on visitors who are coming in dress and props in America to be able to tell our own stories. And I think that is one of the things that we should be able to do. It is quite encouraging also that I see a picture here by the minister at the Mekoreng village. A well-attended meeting, participating, the people being able to tap into access of information from the relevant. And I think we should continue doing this. But I think the absence of such a public diplomacy policy, we would not be able to take matters forward. And I think in that light, Jay, it is encouraging that we seek to bring about hegemony in terms of the regional dynamics and internationally in what we are doing, and I think this is good, and I would want to agree that we note and bless it that it's presented to us. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm going to be quick. The one is just that in the presentation, no mention is made of the Pan-African Parliament, particularly one looks at how we can utilize the presence of those parliamentarians in South Africa by exposing them a little bit more to South Africa itself, and exposing South African citizens to those people there. Is there anything happening? Maybe it's happening in another, what do you call it, department? This another branch, that's what you call it. The second thing that I want to ask is about the point that was made earlier about the importance of our economic development. Now, I read an article indicating that we need more staff with economic insights in our embassies. I think it's important for members of this committee to just get a little bit more of an understanding of that dynamic, because we know that one of the difficulties that you're having when you presented your budget to us last year, it was indicated that you do not have enough money. And now you don't have enough money, and you're going to come at some other time again and say to us, but in order to sell brands South Africa, we are also sitting with the problem of people with economic expertise in our embassies and our missions. Just not letting you know about this person.
Thank you very much. No, it's true that our mandate has been increasing, but the resources have been decreasing. So we actually have to do more with less. As we speak, for the next 3 financial years, our allocation has decreased quite significantly. In the 2015-2016 financial year, I think it's about something in the region of 68 million reduction. For the next 2 years, almost the same figure. So yes, the issue of
is that also related to the value of the South African rand?
Well, I don't know how they arrived at these figures, the people at Treasury. So the allocation is decreasing, the rand is weaker, which means for us internationally it poses a problem because we use foreign currency there. It's a big problem. I'm sure the CFO can come and give a presentation on this so that you just get a picture of how difficult the terrain has become because of the issue of resources. Now, the issue of Pan African Parliament, no, that is inherent in our strategy. There is actually a chief director within the department dedicated to supporting the work of the Pan African Parliament. You would know that there is an ongoing project which is yet to be finished to identify an area. Well, the area has been identified sort of with the Tshwane municipality, but to build a Pan-African precinct, let us call it an area that is going to house all the EU agencies, Pan-African Parliament, UN agencies and all of that, and so work is ongoing in that regard, and we work very closely with the Pan-African Parliament. They are involved in all our programs. Honorable Mokoena, I couldn't agree more. I think foreign policy by its nature is a bit elitist, and that's why we're trying to break the mold by taking foreign policy to people through the community engagement, the triple P that I referred to, the lectures that we do, but also through the diplomatic fair. We bring ordinary South Africans to unpack and connect the dots for them. One of the shows that we do on our radio station is also syndicated to community radio stations, 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock every morning. So the show that we do there, you will hear it on all community radio stations and use indigenous languages. So this is an effort to reach the sectors of our society that would ordinarily not be reached when you talk foreign policy, because it's true that you can forget them and exclude them if you don't make a deliberate effort to integrate strategies to reach them. So that's very much on our radar, and we try and do that. Chair, I think I have attempted to cover all questions.
Thank you very much. According to my time, my clock, it is now 11:20. Can we hear Mr. Van der Vinder? How much time would you need for the presentation?
Listen, I believe nothing more than 10 to 15 minutes.
10 to 15.
And
can we
subsequent questions?
Then look, with question time included, so that we leave here no later than 12. Thank you. It's over to you.
If you can just give me 2 minutes to set up my PowerPoint presentation.
Okay, while you're doing that, allow me then to deal with another household matter, which is the apologies. We have received written apologies from Honorable Lond, who is traveling abroad. Honorable Suka is traveling abroad. Honorable Dikhare is meeting Parliament business with some visitors to the NCOP that she's got to give attention to. Chapter 3, am I right? This is a 3. It's not written. We are in agreement if it's not written. You can table it, we receive it, but it's not accepted. The written ones are accepted. Can I then put you to the house that we accept the 3 that we've received, our secretary has received in writing? Even, Honorable Mokwena, if they send an email or a WhatsApp or something like that, just so that the secretary has something. Honorable? Yes, yes. Thank you. Are we ready to roll?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, members. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm here to present the establishment of the South African Council on International Relations. And Chairperson, before I start, I just want to mention to you that I'm very pleased. I flew in yesterday from Pretoria, and I stayed over last night in a hotel here in Cape Town. And this morning at the breakfast table, I could hear many languages spoken. Amongst the South African languages, but I was very pleased. There was Mandarin, Swedish, German, Finnish, and so on and so on. So that just tells me that we are doing something right, Chairperson. That we manage through, and I won't say just through our diplomacy, but through other means as well, that we are succeeding in attracting tourists to our country, which is one of the core functions of DIRCO. And which is, as DDG Manuel pointed out, our economic diplomacy, a very, very important aspect of it, of our foreign policy as well. Now, the foreign policy is not the sole domain and the monopoly of DIRCO. And yet it's important, and Honorable Mokwena, we realize that it is not a theoretical thing. It must have impact for the communities. So whatever we do abroad must have an impact on the societies and the communities in KwaMashu or Mdantane or Lebowakgomo or Ayalicha. It must have an impact. But we realize that we don't have all the knowledge and the monopoly on it. And hence, the realization came from a proposal from our minister about 5 years ago that civil society should have a bigger say in foreign policy formulation. And hence there was a proposal by the minister, and which was subsequently also echoed by President Zuma in the previous State of the Nation address, that we should involve civil society more than what we are currently doing. Hence the suggestion that there should be a South African Council on International Relations that will consist of people from civil society, as being business, academics, labor, and so on, to give an input on our foreign policy. So this was taken to Cabinet, and Cabinet gave in principle approval in November 2011 for SACWI to be established. And Cabinet noted and approved the establishment of SACWI, and there was a terms of reference of SACWI agreed, and it was agreed that the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Minister Nkoni Mashabane, will then appoint these members of SACWI. Chairperson, the objectives of SACWI is to give effect to the foreign policy priorities as indicated in Chapter 7 of the NDP, so that we can tackle the problems that we have in South Africa, poverty, inequality in employment, etc. And I refer to the previous State of the Nation address by President Zuma, where he said we will engage business, labor, and other social partners in pursuit of our solutions. And then SACWI will serve as a platform for the generation of public debate on foreign policy. Chairperson, honorable members, the function of SACWI the idea is that it will operate under the Durka umbrella with a supporting secretariat located within Durka. And this committee, or council rather, will host two annual plenary sessions and two thematic working group meetings, as well as an international symposium, and it was suggested that it was called, or will be called, the Johnny Marketini Dialogue Forum, to discuss with internal and external interlocutors key foreign policy issues. It was agreed further that it will comprise of up to 25 members, and I said academia, business, civil society, and labor, who will serve in their personal capacities. These members will serve for a period of 3 years, and they will sign a contract in terms of the PSMA. Now, upon approval by principal approval by cabinet, Durka followed the open process, and advertisements were published in 5 national newspapers. 275 applications were received, and there was an executive management committee, a committee meeting of Durka, that shortlisted 25 candidates to serve on SACWIRE. Chairperson, that was about three years ago, but subsequently 5 candidates were removed from this list due to a change in their portfolios and in the categories in which they were nominated, meaning that they were maybe nominated on a Labour ticket, but they are no longer with Labour. So they were taken in consultation with the Office of the Minister, their names were then taken off, and subsequently I present today a list of 20 names. Chairperson, one of the honourable members referred to the secrecy of the document. But this is not a secret document, but these names are presented to you and it has not been approved yet. So I think it will be appreciated if it can be confidential, because these people are not aware that they are nominated, and as I said, these names are not approved yet by cabinet. So here we have the list of, I'm not going through all these names. These are the academia, five members from business, and then civil society. Quiet person, I can give more detail about every person. I have the qualifications or a brief CVs of each one. And the following 3 persons from Labour. These were names that were approved by the EMC of Durka. And now, once approved, members will receive letters of appointment. As I said, it will be for a 3-year contract, and their operations will be guided by a term of reference that will be also be given to them. The idea is that SACWIRE will be officially launched during 2015 at the Gala event. Thereafter, the first plenary meeting will take place. As I said, there will be 2 plenary meetings per year, and then at the launch, it will be coincide with the Johnny Marketini Dialogue Forum. Then you have the financial implications. It's estimated that the total budget for SACWIRE for 2014-2015 will be roughly about 1.8 million, and this funds will be sought in a separate budget item. And members of SACWIRE will be remunerated on an hourly basis according to National Treasury guidelines. According to these guidelines, the chairperson will receive more than the ordinary members, and there will be a special research stipend paid to these members outside official meetings. Chairperson, that is all from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Why they are working so easily is two points. That one is that as a nation we challenge to find ways in which we now are ready to go to our future and therefore to both young people. It would be extremely appreciated if we could look at one really that way. And we have the second point that I would want to raise is very unfortunate that we've been set to come together, also with gender threat in the United States. It is true. I know that there is a process that's important. Sometimes one of the most important even if it means that it's quite a little bit of a
thanks, Jay. I'm a bit disturbed, to be quite honest, because this SACWAR was already approved by Cabinet on Wednesday, 9 November 2011. We are now at 2015, 4 years past that date, and we are only now starting with interviews. Now, I would like to know why that this long time frame take place till we get to this. Was it because of budget constraints that it was not budgeted for? And then when these interviews will be done, the panel that will be part of the interviews, can you also give us more information on such panel and who they would consist of? Thank you.
I just wanted to find out how this structural operation is going to be housed in DECO, with the support staff from DECO, or from what their budget is. They are going to have a staff of their own, support staff, something like that. And secondly, I also wanted to find out, I asked Professor Newkirk Kidwa in one of his lectures in a club I attended, the role of traditional leaders. And he gave me a very unsatisfactory sort of stupid response. Why are they being sidelined when it comes to these things of public diplomats, as they call it, international relations? I was saying, because when you come to Africa, we are not the only country in Africa that has traditional leaders. And when it comes to matters of civil society, they have a role to play, not just in South Africa. In the countries where they exist in Africa, they have a role to play, especially in terms of the stability of the communities. Is it a deliberate omission, a mistake, or what? Can it still be accommodated? Thank you.
On a lighter note on that, on Honorable Kola, I saw this interesting picture where one of the present leaders in this country is saying that we must get rid of these foreign nationals, not allow them in country. One of the indigenous people in the country says, yes, I agree with you. So we do find that it's not only in South Africa, but many, not only in Africa, but many other parts of the world as well. I mean, if you look at the role of the Native Canadians, the Native Americans, look at indigenous people in Australia, people in New Zealand, it might be helpful, particularly in a world where we find that we have become so materialistic that we look at that role of traditional leaders. I'm just trying to motivate the call that you're making also to to Delta. Are there any additional questions, comments? Okay.
As a general remark, I can say that there was a screening process to
identify these people. The advertisements were placed in the newspapers back in 2011, and based on the series and the application received, the decision was then made, and there was it was trimmed down to the 25 people that I referred to. So they were not really a interview process, but the selection was done on the applications received from the people. Now, when one look at representativity in terms of gender, or be it traditional leaders or young people, one must realize that first and foremost, we were looking for people that are knowledgeable on international relations and foreign policy, and people that we really feel can make a contribution in this regard. So it was not always easy to stick to that formula strictly, to have overboard representativity. But it was a long process, Chairperson, honorable members, to arrive at it. I can promise you it didn't come easily, and maybe that explains why it took so long. I cannot really give you an answer why it took so long, but I know that there was a lot of internal discussions and getting the names through and back again until we arrived at these 25, which were then subsequently reduced to 20 names. That may be, as I explained, why it took so long. But yes, this process already started in 2010, 2011, and we are now in 2015. The status at this stage is that there's a cabinet memorandum to the minister suggesting or proposing these 20 names, which she will then take to cabinet for formal consultation and notification to cabinet, and then the launch will take place as soon as possible, hopefully already in April this year, if it can be done in such a short span of time. There was a question about the support staff and finance. Yes, there will be a dedicated section within DIRCO that will render the support to SACWIRE. We don't think it will be necessarily a full-time job. This council will only meet twice per year, but we will have personnel that will look after them. The budget will come from the DIRCO budget. At the moment, DIRCO did not budget for this because we were not sure when exactly will the SACWIRE be established. So, but the promise was made by the CFO to find money for the establishment, the launch, and then annually for the smooth operational and functioning of SACWIRE. I think I've covered the questions.
Thank you very much. Are there bringers today? Again, thanks very much to the colleagues from the Department of International Relations. Colleagues, just stay with me for one more minute. Just in terms of our program for next year, I might be sort of sick. Our state of public address next week, Monday. And then we also have the women's passage. We have the shop. So I'm still parting the waters. However, I wanted to assure you that like today, we are having a meeting of the Selection Committee next week. We will not, in terms of the first project of that, have the Department of Tourism to do a presentation of stuff. Instead, we have, because they, I mean, the Minister and the staff are also having something, I think they're not working with you, there's some tourism exhibition happening in the center. Rules, and they kindly requested us to allow them to concentrate on that. They will also be coming with better insight into stuff from that point. So we agree with the Secretary myself that we will stop programs around. But instead, we have this positive change in humans next year, and they will be talking to us about the National Empowerment Fund and centers that the National Empowerment Fund. In case the order takers
Thank you.